I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region.
Oh, great. Now to be back with old friend Paul Layton of the Salem News. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, always great talking with you. Get caught up on a whole bunch of stuff, and half the fun is our conversation before we actually do the recording. So I appreciate your stopping by. Paul, one thing I want to get into, and I want to be delicate about it once again, and I'm not sure how to approach it, but the ongoing situation in Danvers, and I use the word situation to cover a whole bunch of stuff. Dr. Lisa Dana, the superintendent of schools, has announced that she's retiring. We have an ongoing controversy regarding a sports team, a hockey coach, NAACP. What is that all about going on in Danvers?
Right. No, it seems like this has been going on for a long time. I mean, this incident that sparked all this, it happened 2 years ago with these allegations against the high school hockey team in Danvers of abusive and, you know, racist behavior in the locker room, and a lot of people have heard all about this, but it's still ongoing. The biggest thing is that the state attorney general's office is investigating this. They've acknowledged that in the last few weeks, that they have an ongoing investigation. So that's going to be the biggest thing when we find out what their findings are. And then in the meantime, the North Shore NAACP, which is an organization that formed a couple of years ago, have started looking into this. They formed a committee of Danvers residents, about 20-25 Danvers residents, to look into this too, and to try to and to come up with recommendations for what the town should do. They say that the town still needs to address this, the culture in the town and in the schools and so forth. And so the big sticking point is that for the NAACP, they want the Steve Baldessari, who was the hockey coach at the time. He has since stepped down as hockey coach. He's also a police officer in town, and he's in the position with the police department where he's in charge of the school resource officer. So he still has a lot to do with the high school and the students. And the NAACP says, because of what happened with the hockey team, that he shouldn't be in this position. They don't want him to be fired as a police officer, but they want him removed from this position that oversees the officers that work in the school. So that's sort of where we stand now. It's you know, as we said, it's been 2 years, and it's still an ongoing controversy.
Paul, what's the sense of those you talk with, either anecdotally or in your reporting, about the investigations themselves? Because what I've read from the Salem News and so on and other sources, what's been released to the public in terms of these investigations, and there have been at least three of them from what I'm aware of, the information that's released is heavily redacted, so the public really can't discern anything from it. And yet, the common theme is that there was real no criminal activity. Well, so what's the sense you get when talking about this? How do people feel about it, or is there going to be another shoe to drop?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure what will happen in terms of, you know, consequences. Some people are saying that the big sticking point is, from what I can gather, is that people say that town and school officials should have said more about what happened in the locker room. And what the officials say is, because of privacy rules, they couldn't give the details. But then, you know, a player on the team came out anonymously and spoke to the media. He spoke to the Boston Globe. He spoke to the Salem News and told what happened with real disturbing detail, and that's what caught the attention of the public, obviously. And then they're saying, why didn't we know about this? School officials did talk about this. We had covered this, not myself, but the reporter that used to cover Danvers for it, covered this in, you know, the previous couple of years before this whole thing blew up, and they had acknowledged that there were incidents and there were problems in the locker room, and they were addressing it, but they didn't give the real specifics. So officials say they're in this difficult position where they want to address this, but they have these privacy laws that they can't violate. So I don't know. I personally think, and a lot of people think, there are ways around this where officials need to walk that fine line, mm-hmm. but maybe err on the side of being more open and honest about things and just letting the public know. So I think that's what the big sticking point is. How do you address these things? What do you tell the public when this stuff is going on? And, you know, the public needs to know what happened and what were the consequences. Those are the big things they need to know.
I find it interesting, Paul. I know that in talking about this previously and concerning ethics, I'm trying to get a hold of some people at Salem State and so on to talk about ethics in sports and what's going on right now with social media, with the COVID effect of people's mental well-being and so on. But what I found kind of fascinating, and please correct me if I'm wrong, was that the Salem News, as you said, did have this information before the Boston Globe got it, but due to ethical concerns from the paper and the reporting and so on and concern for the kids, the Salem News didn't put that out there. And then the Globe went ahead and did that. And I find that's interesting in and of itself, because this thing is so intertwined with how we deal with one another. Did I have that right? Didn't the Salem News actually have this whole thing before the Globe broke it?
Yes, our reporter, her name is Erin Nolan. She has since left the paper, and she did a great job, and she did speak with this student, but we have a general policy at the Salem News that we don't use anonymous sources.
Mm-hmm.
There are exceptions, and I'm not, you know, privy to what the conversations were between the editor, you know, among the editors when this story was being worked on. But the bottom line was that, you know, at least for a period of time, the Salem News decided not to print the story because we didn't have somebody on record meaning using their name. You know, we had an anonymous source, and then the Globe came out with the story, and then we ended up, you know, publishing our story too, and, you know, granting this player anonymity. So that's more of an inside newspaper, you know, issue, you know, which I think is interesting, and they are, you know, difficult questions about when you give sources anonymity. The general idea is that the stories of such importance to the public that it's worth naming the person and, you know, protecting them. But those are difficult decisions that every newspaper and every news organization has to deal with.
Of course, and the onus is on the paper, whereas it should be on the officials covering this thing and getting the information out. So I find that a very fascinating concept, or at least story that is intertwined with this, because there are just so many levels of lack of civility, I guess, in our society right now, that it's nice to see some of them actually being observed. And I congratulate the paper on that, and Erin, you know, great stuff. And again, being very sensitive to the fact of that these are kids or at least were kids when all this took place. Well, it remains to be seen what's going to happen, but again, I encourage people to check out Paul's articles on the Salem News, and I will have them posted here separately. Plus, in today's paper on Wednesday, there is the story about Dr. Dana resigning, so I implore you to check that out. Well, looking at some other stories, just kind of quickly, we didn't discuss in a pregame warm-up. We got a couple more topics, but one of them was there was a teen basketball league or something or other that stirred a little controversy last week, I think it was, about playing a charitable or at least a semi-organized event in Beverly.
Yes. No, I'm glad you brought that up, Rick, because that was a big story last week in Beverly. So what happened was last weekend on Saturday, there were a group of high school students were playing basketball at Peach Park. Peach Park was, was that Pete Frades, the Beverly resident who was, famous for the Ice Bucket Challenge and his battle with ALS, and he helped raise millions of dollars. Everybody knows Pete Frades. He passed away a couple of years ago, but it was 3 years ago, they redid a park in a neighborhood in Beverly, a park where Pete grew up, where the Frades lived, and they named it Pete's Park. It's a beautiful park. It's accessible for people with disabilities and has a nice basketball court and tennis court. So anyway, these kids were playing on I think it was a Saturday morning, and the town's recreation director, Bruce Doig, he's been the director for years, he basically came and kicked them off. He said neighbors were complaining and they had to leave. So what the students did was on Monday night, they showed up at the city council meeting. There were about 30 students and about 100 people at the meeting, and one of the students spoke and said, why are we getting kicked out of a public park? And they were actually going to try to raise money for ALS research. They were doing this as a senior project, and they want to play throughout the summer every weekend, sort of an organized league. And so anyway, the whole thing came to a head, and it was this issue of, in Beverly, at least, and I'm sure, you know, other cities and towns run into it, is these smaller neighborhood parks, and they're nestled in, you know, neighborhoods, and they're right next to homes, and how much activity can and should go on there. So, yeah, so the bottom line is, the high school students met with Mayor Mike Cahill and with Bruce Doig, the recreation director. The mayor and the recreation director actually apologized for you know, Bruce Doig's behavior, or, you know, some of the comments he made to the kids. And the bottom line is they were allowed to play. They did play basketball there last weekend. And hopefully they'll continue to do so without a lot of problems.
Well, that's a story that has a happy ending. Thank goodness. All right, Paul, we're gonna tease some upcoming reporting, I guess. Everybody knows there's a housing crisis everywhere, I guess, on the North Shore and elsewhere. And affordable housing is at a premium. And now the MBTA has stepped into all of this. So what's your latest on this, and what will you be reporting on in the upcoming issue?
Well, this morning I covered a talk by the State Secretary of Housing and Economic Development. His name is Mike Keneally. He's actually a St. John's Prep graduate. I didn't realize that until he mentioned that this morning. So he spoke at the Hawthorne Hotel in Salem to you know, a bunch of local leaders, mayors and state representatives and other, you know, and other officials. And his main point, and he said this, and a lot of people have said this for a while, is that there's a real severe housing crisis in Massachusetts. That's no surprise to everybody. The cost of housing is so high. And he said, well, it's leading to a rise in homelessness and, you know, making it difficult for young families and seniors and everybody else to find a place to live. And he also said it's going to hurt the economy in Massachusetts, that, you know, companies and skilled workers will, you know, will leave the state if they can't find an affordable place to live. So one of the solutions the state has come up with is the state legislature passed this law, and the governor signed it, you know, recently, that requires cities and towns that have an MBTA service in their community, either train station, subway stop, that they have to build multifamily affordable housing near the train station, basically. What they have to do is they have to change the zoning to allow for it, and that eventually will open it up. And, you know, Keneally, this, you know, the housing secretary said this will take a lot of years before you will see the effect, but it's that emphasis on building housing near train stations and near public transportation. He said this is the first time the state has come in and pretty much mandated zoning changes in local communities in order to create more housing. And I know there's been some pushback in different communities. This is all still fairly new, and they're working out the details, but it's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
Yeah, I was just wondering, does a city or town have a right to say, we don't want the MBTA here anymore? Can you shut out the train?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't either.
And that's the interesting thing, that it's a mandate. And he, you know, the secretary kept emphasizing it's not a mandate to build. It's sort of like in Beverly here, they're looking to rezone the area along the Bass River and down by the train station. It sort of goes along with the same theory. So they changed the zoning, and zoning just means, you know, what can be built and what cannot be built with, so you can change the zoning, and that doesn't mean all these places are going to immediately start being built. You still need a private, you know, developer to come in and buy the land and build it and so forth. So it takes years, but the zoning, which is kind of like a boring topic in general, you know, mm-hmm. but it's key to all this, and you need to change that first in order to allow for new housing to be built. Whether or not it's going to be affordable, that's what people say. Well, look at all this housing that's going up in Salem, Beverly, and a lot of places, but nobody can afford it. I mean, people can afford it because they fill up pretty quickly, but there's not housing for everybody.
Right. It's not under the definition it belongs. My head is spinning, but I always appreciate Paul Layton's stopping by. Paul Layton of the Salem News. This is MSO News Sports.
This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.